The Barking Carnival Unplugged podcast contains mature themes and adult language. It should be considered not safe for work, and it's not to be consumed around children, the elderly, or Methodists. The opinions contained in this podcast are those of the hosts alone, and do not represent the opinions of SB Nation or the University of Texas. Chris Del Conte has disavowed all knowledge of this podcast. Abandon hope, all ye who enter here. Hello, Longhorn fans, and welcome to a somewhat somber but nonetheless resilient edition of the Barking Carnival Unplugged podcast. My name is Jason Chilton, a.k.a. Nova 60. With me, as always, Jacob Dedamore, a.k.a. Kip's Big Boy, and the great Craig Douglas, a.k.a. Willie Whale McClyde, coming to you live from Mount Thunder on the heels of a tantalizing, tempting, oh-so-close, yet oh so far fall to the Bayou Bengals and their newly vaunted Prairie Up offense at DKR. Gentlemen, what do we think of all this?
Well, what I really like to do today is deep fat fry Todd Orlando's balls, but we don't have a culinary segment, so we really can't do that.
I don't know that that would stop us.
doesn't work very well over radio. I don't know. I thought the biggest difference between LSU and Texas last night was on defense. I assumed that we would have subpar cornerback play, but the way that Orlando called the game, it might not have mattered if we'd had a pair of Daryl Green corners back there. The aggressive call matching continues to get us burned against good spread offenses, and it will continue to hurt us going forward in our biggest games. I don't think we have an identity. I think we have a guy with a shitload of flashcards who would really kick ass in a Madden tournament. Ultimately, this is Herman's responsibility, and I don't think he can be unaware of this, and I'll be watching him very closely going forward to see how he reacts.
Yeah, my thoughts were similar as far as the negative aspect of it. You know, we talked about in our preview episode that one of the worries defensively was going to be the youth and inexperience. And that got exposed last night in a big, big way. I don't think our defensive coaching staff, specifically Todd Orlando, did a lot to help them and put them in positions to be successful. Tom Herman said as much in his post-game press conferences, or press conference. We'll get to that in a little bit. But you, as a coach, this is one of the things a couple of seasons ago I was so irritated with Tim Beck about. And he's turned things around on the offensive side. Now Todd Orlando's fallen into the same trap. When you have weaknesses on your side of the ball and you're the guy calling the plays, you have to do things in your scheme and in your play calling to try and help mask those weaknesses and emphasize your strengths. And right now Todd Orlando is not doing that, especially when it comes to playing against spread offenses. And you can go back over the last couple of seasons and see that, and it's coming to fruition, and they need to figure something out on that end, because right now what they're doing against those type of teams just isn't working.
Yeah, figure something out is definitely an easy impulse to reach for.
Easy to say.
I don't know what you figure out, you know, having been through the spring, having been through the fall, and walking out and just looking like you have no real plan to combat a team that can spread you out three or four wide, and, you know, no option to really get pressure with a three-man line but to blitz, but there just seems to be no coherence between the blitzing and the coverage, the coverage and the down and distance situation.
They have no identity.
The third and 17, of course, you can burn a whole segment on that alone. Or burn down your own home.
We'd have been better off building a replica of the Maginot Line 15 yards off the ball, for fuck's sake. I mean, I don't know what else they could have done.
Yeah, they can't go through Belgium, so. No.
Yeah.
But it is, yeah, it is a defense that, even though, you know, some of the parts are young, you know, Jalen Green's a phenomenal talent who is young and got, you know, he put up a good fight, but, you know, just got physically beat a number of times by some guys who will have their names called on Friday or maybe even Thursday in the NFL draft. So as a sophomore, you say, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a couple other guys out there in, Cook and Boyce in particular, who are having more pronounced struggles. But,
you just somehow made a defense that is less than the sum of its parts, and guys are not even really able to execute at the level of competency you'd think, because I don't think they know what their jobs really are.
No.
I don't think they know this is really the plan that we're trying to get done on this play. It's a lot of guys kind of hanging out, seeming to play, you know, from without the benefit of a rewatch, you know, seeming to play kind of tentative and giving way too many just easy throws up to a guy who was making easy throws, hard throws, and everything else.
Every good football team has its bread and butter on both sides of the ball. And if you ask me what Texas bread and butter is on defense, my answer is clusterfuck. because I can't tell you what it is. I mean, we seem to put ourselves in situations where we're forced to play a lot of man coverage, but we're not a man coverage defense.
Yeah, I mean, that. I think, Jason, you brought it up a second ago, the cohesion between what they're wanting to do up front and what the coverage is combined with that, just have there's just no pairing that's working right now. They just don't seem to work together. It's like, okay, we're going to do this up front. We're just going to run this coverage. But no, those things need to match each other. You know, I got so frustrated in the fourth quarter of that game last night watching it and watching Texas call blitzes, watching Orlando call these different blitzes from his three-man line, calling five- or six-man blitzes, but then having the cornerbacks giving 10-yard cushions to the receivers on the outside and just giving up lollipops,
and as you were talking about. Being so far off the ball on that. I mean, when they're handing off, they're even further off the ball. There just doesn't seem to be anything these guys do they can fall back on. They don't have a foundation that they can fall back on and say, okay, these are the things that we knew, that we know that we can do well, that we feel comfortable calling in a pinch.
Mm-hmm.
Those things don't seem to exist.
Yeah, and the call matching thing is right on point. It just seems like Orlando's trying to match calls instead of just trying to do situationally what his defense does best.
Well, everything I know about call matching, I learned from Jason, so I want him to explain just a little bit about what we mean when we talk about call matching.
Yeah, it's the general idea that you think you have got a sense very specifically of what they're going to run, and you're making a call that you think will shut that down, whether you think we're going to, you know, send a blitz, we're going to force them to throw in the flat, and we're having a safety buzz down for that, but then you might, on the other side, be leaving, you know, two or three guys in man coverage with no safety help.
Yeah.
And if they are looking that way, you've got a real problem on their hands. Yeah. You know, whether you assume they are running and you're leaving yourself ass open to the pass or vice versa, it is just not guys playing with some kind of sound fundamentals and the ability to say, this is my role. If this happens, I do this. If this happens, I do this. If this happens, I do that. And, you know, being able to react in real time and just play real football.
Right,
and
you don't want your 12th defender to be a 2 of KY.
No, yeah,
it's never, never a plus.
Yeah, no. Yes, your bread and butter is 3-day-old Wonder Bread and a tub of country cock. You know, something's gone pretty far wrong, and you are not going to be making a tasty sandwich.
Yeah, I think, you know, Jason and I, you and I were talking about something, you know, before we started recording that I thought is a good thing to bring up. It's, you know, if you're a team that's getting just consistently beat through the air like Texas was getting just whipped last night, okay, I say it's the easiest thing to do, but the one thing that you should do, that seems kind of a basic football thing, is like, all right, you guys, the different coverages we're trying, the different pressures we're trying, they're not getting there, guys are getting wide open, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to get right up in your face, and if you beat us over the top, tip of the cap. But we are not going to let you just run free and open. You're going to have to work to get open off of press coverage so that our pressure has time to get there and you're not just running free over the middle of the field.
Yeah, and it's that is easier said than done.
True.
Against athletes the caliber of what LSU had out wide. But at some point, you have to make the guy make tough throws. I mean, he stuck a couple of, you know, tremendous big boy throws. Probably his best of the night, I thought, was on the seam route to the slot where Josh Thompson had reasonable coverage, but put it just up high.
Joe Burrow outside was great shoulder. Last night.
Receiver went up and got it. And if you lose on throws like that, so be it. Yeah. But there were too many open skinny posts and open digs and things with a gaping vacant hole in the middle of the field. I mean, the linebacker drops were probably
the metaphors associated with gaping vacant holes, but you can continue.
Yeah, should we take your implication?
And we're off!
7 minutes in.
Jake, I'm so happy we managed like 7 minutes of genuine sports analysis, and all of a sudden, it all goes to shit just like it always does. Continue!
Oh, it's quality analysis. You just can't spell analysis without anal. You might be able to spell Orlando without anal, but maybe we should work on the spelling.
Yeah, I mean, I do think we should give credit to LSU and Joe Burrow's.
Oh, no question.
He played a phenomenal game. You can tell that LSU has really bought into this spread offense that they're finally starting to run and catching up with the rest of college football, and they're running it so far fantastically. But as Jason said, once in the first quarter, Texas was doing pretty good defensively, but once they made some adjustments on their offensive line.
We didn't make
and
any.
They started keeping guys off of Burrow because they got pressure early. Once they stopped getting pressure, it was a field day for him and the receivers. As good as they are, it was like pitch and catch. It was like playing 7-on-7.
Yeah.
And it was tough to watch from that aspect.
Yeah. And the idea that, the blitzing was completely unsuccessful, that's not true. I think we managed 4 sacks. Yeah. Believe all of them came on a blitz of some kind or another. I believe the interception that Osai pulled down was knocked down by or popped up in the air by a blitzer who got a hand on it and allowed him to do that. So, some plays were made there, but you said, once they started shutting off the inside lanes, not only was he having that extra beat to throw, not only was what was happening in the back end not really matched to the blitz, but our D-line, which, played a very solid game overall, given the level of opponent and the fact that we were so light in the box all game, they were just not able to get that pressure and push to really disrupt what he was doing. There were plenty of times he was able to take a step up as pressure was starting to come outside and, deliver a ball that found a guy screaming open. Yeah. So it's hard to ask, you want a collection of Clemson or Alabama style monsters if you're doing a 3-down lineman defense lining up so tight.
But I certainly don't mean to sit here and advocate that we abrogate all aggression or anything like that. It's just that I think we have to be smart about it, and it seems to me that he just kind of defaults to when all else fails, fuck it, this is who we are. Let's just counter it with aggression. I mean, it just doesn't.
Aggression for aggression's sake is not
really
a good idea.
An elephant in the room is the 3rd and 17 call.
Yeah, I mean why are you going with a 6-man zero blitz on 3rd and 17?
It was 7.
Maybe it was 7 men. I counted at least 6, but it was. And I get what Herman was somewhat, I guess, protecting Orlando a little bit in the post game presser, saying they were trying to force a turnover and incompletion. I get that, but.
But
you didn't have to send that many guys on 3rd and 17.
Yeah, and it was also not it was also not 30 seconds left in the game where you had no legitimate chance for the punt to drive the field. It was not a 17-10 game where your offense had been struggling. You didn't think you'd get down the field. I mean, that game was sitting there to be won by Sam Ehlinger in the offense, and I think they would have done it.
Ed Orgeron fashion. Asked about that play, the 61-yard touchdown pass on 3rd and 17, his quote was
biscuit
gravy
touchdown.
But he literally said, "Thank God, I thank God we scored there, because if we hadn't gotten that play," he said, he said he did not think they could stop Texas.
Well, they were totally gassed, as evidenced by the fact that this is a minor thing in the grand scheme of things, but I feel like we have to mention it. I never thought I would see any basketball team outflop the Ginobili-era San Antonio Spurs. But I saw a fucking football team do it last night. I have never seen anything that egregious in my life. It was just...
There were a couple of drives where it was every other play.
Dirty-ass old SEC tactic of how you slow down a no-huddle offense...
And it didn't work.
You know, and it didn't work. But not only that, what made it just doubly bullshit was the fact that did any of their offensive players ever have a cramp?
No.
Mysteriously. No. Mysteriously somehow.
Mysteriously not. They must have had the piss in their Gatorade that the defensive players did not have.
Yeah, pretty sure they practice in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where it's hot and humid there as it is here.
Well, one of my best friends in the whole world that I sit with, we have tickets together, he said that after about the fourth flop, he turned and looked at me and said, "Holy fuck, it must be the altitude."
Nice. I like it. Yeah, I mean, by the way, neither defense, there was a lot of chirping about the whole DBU thing. That title's up for grabs. Anybody wants to take it? Because neither school can claim that after last night.
Yeah, well, the one high BAC tweet that I managed last night was that apparently it meant deep ball uncovered, and they were and they were contesting that title hotly.
Yes, yeah, they were.
They certainly were. But it was not all bad.
No, it was
not all bad. And I think there are some plaudits to be passed around. And offensively, I think we liked what we saw. The first half was kind of rocky. You know, I don't certainly fault Herman for the decision to go for it on either of those fourth down calls. I think
I think I would have kicked the second time, but
no, you know. I wouldn't have. But you and I differ on that.
We do.
But the analytics are what they are, and they favor him doing what he did. And I don't like the call on the second one. I mean, but obviously the Ingram drop. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and none of it should have mattered. Because the first time they went for it on fourth down, the play call was great. They executed everything except catching the damn ball. And Keonta Ingram's probably did not have a lot of fun looking at this tape today, because he was the one guy on offense that really did not play well at all last night.
Let's talk about what they did right for a little bit. Because I think that's, you know, it's a 7-point loss against now the fifth-ranked team in the country. So I think we've beat the hell out of the defense enough. So let's talk about what went right on offense. So, Jason, from your standpoint, what did you saw that you particularly liked?
I guess the guy who stood out the most, you know, outside of Ellinger, who I thought was, you know, somewhere between very good and fantastic all game long, you know, especially considering the caliber
especially
of opposition
in the second half,
was the Duve, Devin Duvernay.
Baller.
And, yeah, from
fucking
a it went from
baller.
A went from a quiet first half to just an outright just Vesuvian Peter North caliber eruption all over the Bengals to the two. I mean, was it eight balls he caught in the second half for, I mean, approaching 150?
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, got, you know, was able to get loose down the field, but, you know, might have been more than that. I think he ended up at 12 for 154 and two touchdowns, you know, almost all of which came in the second half. And tacklers wanted no part of him after a while.
Yeah.
You saw guys doing the kind of breakdown, get ready to catch and try to drag him down, you know, posture that you normally see with one of the classic 250-pound Alabama downhill running backs.
Right.
And this is coming from a slot receiver, a rocked-up slot receiver, but a slot receiver nonetheless.
Yeah,
but
I mean, it
just
was
ran with
a lot of ankle grabbing.
Purpose.
It was fun watching him when he would catch the ball and turn up field. He was not running away from contact. He was not trying to go out of bounds. He was looking for guys coming at him and lowering his shoulder into them. And you're right, as good as the LSU DBs played for about two quarters, in the second half, they got gassed and they got bruised because Devin Duvernay was running through them.
You know, and he wasn't the only one either. I mean, I think a couple other guys showed out last night. I mean, let's leave Colin Johnson for last because at times he was in witness protection. But I think Brennan Eagles, I mean, that guy is elevated in my mind to imminent baller status. That guy has a lot to offer. It's kind of unexpected. And then Jake Smith. I mean, he's just Jake Smith. I can't say that I'm surprised because he was the player of the year last year in high school. I think we expected a lot out of him, but he's delivering. He's delivering a lot sooner than I think we expected.
Oh, yeah. No question.
But Colin, you know, what was his line?
Colin was a mixed bag last night because he only ended up with three catches for 49
yards. See, I just think,
that doesn't tell the story of the game.
No, I know. I mean, he drew a lot of coverage, but I don't think, I sense that he didn't get off coverage very well. And there were a couple of balls he missed
DB's made a couple of nice plays on balls that got to him. Him and Sam also just didn't connect a couple of times.
I just didn't feel like he didn't use it. I don't know. I don't want to be overly critical of him because I know he's supposed to be a high-volume target. But I just didn't – in a game like that, you know, on the other side, Jefferson showed up.
He did.
On our side, not necessarily the same story.
True. I do think part of it was I think Colin Johnson definitely drawing their best, you know, their good coverage and people, you know, really paying attention to him. I think that did help Duvernay get open early. And when he started to pick things up, it allowed some things to open up. But, yeah, I mean, Colin Johnson did not have a great game. I don't necessarily think it's because he was just getting blanketed all night. But, yeah, he's got to perform better. He needs to come up with some of those balls that are getting thrown up to him and, you know, make those grabs. He wasn't doing that last night. I give credit to the LSU DBs for how they were playing him. But, you know, you're right. He wasn't doing a good job of getting separation last night.
Yeah, if the LSU receivers played themselves some Friday games or even Thursday games in terms of what day you're going to hear your name called in the NFL draft, I mean, that was a Saturday game from Colin Johnson. I mean, you're looking at that, you're saying this guy is an interesting size, speed project that production does not seem to be there, and if they've figured out one thing for the NFL, like, players play and ballers ball and receivers catch. And if you are leading your team by a substantial margin just in terms of production through the air, odds are pretty good that's going to translate. If you're not, then it's not. So if he is dreaming of the draft status that, you know, his frame and speed and you know, backflip ball catching on the beach videos would make you think that he is shooting for.
He
does not have a lot of time left in his career to step up, but he's got a quarterback that, you know, receivers at probably at least 110 D1 schools, if not 120, would kill for. So
right,
yeah. So it's time to take that next step.
So let's let's talk about Sam last night. How do you think? What are your thoughts on what kind of night Sam had? I thought he played okay in the first half. I thought he came on in the second half with the rest of the offense. He just balls his guts out every time. He delivers. And if I had one knock on Sam, it's his touch on deep balls. But nobody's perfect, and I think he brings far too many other things to the table for me to dwell on that. But I thought he had a great game last night. His line, you know, over 450 yards total offense, ought to be plenty to win. But, you know, there is that one thing to work on. But I like him to have another excellent season.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Sam, I thought he started off a little bit slow. Missed a couple of throws early. But he really got in a rhythm as the game went on. And, you know, I thought he did it. The one thing I will say I thought I would see more from him last night that he didn't do, not that he necessarily needed it, but the way with the run game not really being effective last night, I would have liked to see Sam actually use his legs a little more than he did. I know it says he had 19 carries, but there were 5 sacks as part of that. Yeah. I thought there was a couple of times last night where he could have, you know, maybe just tucked it and gone on a couple of drives that didn't finish early in the first half. You know, the goal line possessions, you know, that just stuck in my craw from the moment it happened.
They were ready for that.
They were
so ready for it.
They were ready for that. But, you know, you had the drop mixed in there too. And Texas just found themselves chasing that touchdown the entire game.
Yeah.
Because of it.
Yeah.
The offense is not the reason they lost this football game last night.
Oh, no.
They're not. They had 0 turnovers again last night against that LSU defense. The offensive line, by the way, since we're talking about Sam, even though it says there were 5 sacks, 2 or 3 of those came late in the game. The offensive line, I thought, was really good last night for the most part.
I have no complaints about them whatsoever.
I thought that they really held back LSU's pass rush. The only time they really got good pressure on Sam, for the most part, was with blitzes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Sam Cosmi just looked like a man among boys.
Oh, yeah.
Playing against real men all that night. He had one, gave up one hold where he was kind of doing his classic look inside for the snap and didn't get around quite quickly enough. But, I mean, there were plenty of times it looked like he was just going to put one hand on Jason's helmet and just have him swinging at him like a a cartoon. I mean, he just did whatever he wanted to against that pass rush. And that's the kind of game that makes you say, oh, God. Could it all come together next year? But he's going to be gone to the NFL.
Yeah,
please stay around, Sam.
Maybe. Yeah.
But Derek Kerstetter played, you know, probably his best game as a pass protector. Mm-hmm. You know, normally you have a redshirt freshman guard out there against a team of LSU's caliber, and you're just hiding your eyes.
Right.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I noticed Angelo a number of times in a good way, very seldom in a bad way. You know, Shaq was a real nice anchor in the middle. Yeah, Braun looked phenomenal on his pulls and survived against some massive guys pushing a 282-pound back. Dug his heels in and held up.
Which is, I think, as much as we could ask for him in pass pro right now.
The other little spark I saw last night, and he didn't have a lot of work, but he was part of what got the offense going in the third quarter, was Roschon Johnson.
My God, Rose a baller. He was the best running back we had last night.
Yeah. I mean, he came out and gave the team some legitimate energy from that position.
He averaged 5 yards a carry, I believe. Something along that.
Close to it, yeah.
You know, something like that.
Yeah, what did he have? Three? Yeah, caught
7
yeah,
for
caught,
32.
Caught three balls.
Three balls.
But the best thing he did, though, was he picked up some blitzes. I mean, I thought he looked better than Ingram did in terms of picking up blitzers.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly got the build and frame for it. You know, he does not look waifish. It's not like he'd thrown in Gerard Hurd as a conversion in the backfield and said, please try and slow this guy down, bite him in the ankle, punch his dick, whatever you got to do. But if you think about it, as a quarterback, you should have some pretty good understanding of what the protections are, responsibilities, whatnot. But yeah, you're still waiting to see, can he step up, hit a blitzer in the chest, and stop their momentum? And yeah, he did it. And
I was very impressed. I elevated Rota Baller status last night.
Yeah, I mean, we saw some nice flashes in week one against La Tech, but I mean, what he did last night in that limited bit of action, it really did. I mean, that when he came in, the Texas offense was still kind of struggling and was still kind of trying to find their way, and he was one of the guys along with Duvernay and Eagles, and of course Sam.
I remember that moment when they went. When they went to 10 personnel, and they brought him in, and they went 4 wide, and they brought Smith, Eagles, both in. They brought those 3 guys in, and things started to click a little bit.
I understand what Herman's identity is as an offense, and what he wants to do, and what he would like to do. But right now, he needs to really not phase out, but reduce the amount of 11 personnel on the field, because it just, right now, Brewer and Leto just aren't bringing much of anything to the table offensively.
No, and I was encouraged by the fact that I think they did that last night. I think we saw, I really liked what I saw out of the empty set. I thought that was, and I didn't really expect to see it. I think we'd seen some people we know and love recommend it, but when I saw it, I was like, oh shit, you know, I mean, he's thinking here. So certainly not that I or anybody, any of us knows any better than he does, but I was gladdened to see the innovation, because he'd been kind of stubborn about his preferred packages up to this point in the time.
And it's not like they did move the ball in the first half. They had success moving the ball. They just didn't finish drives.
Sure.
In the second half, they started finishing drives, and they made some nice adjustments.
Well, I felt like they opened up the playbook in the second half.
Yeah. Agreed.
And they just, I mean, and just, again, I mean, I know I've already talked about him, but a fully weaponized Duve. Holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was nothing they could do with him.
No.
Nothing they could do with him.
They had no answer.
And Brewer provided his highest and best use in that empty set. We go up and do that little rub and spring Duve open on that inside slant, and then, boom, off to the races.
Yeah. They had no answer for Duvernay in the second half last night. None. Whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be such an asset going forward. I mean, that has been one of the big missing pieces for the offense. You know, not only the explosive plays that we've talked about, but just that ability to turn those, to turn those little hitches into 5, Jason, 10, 15. Jason,
have I mentioned to you that I got some beautiful furnished casitas?
I believe I have heard that about you, Mac. Congratulations on 2-0, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Okay, before we go any further, as we mentioned last week, we do have a sponsor for the Hornscast set of podcasts, including this one here at Barking Carnival. We are sponsored by Last Hand Stats. See, you got it in my head now, you fucker. I told him I said that yesterday. Last he was like, what hand. The fuck?
Yeah, last. It always ends up that way with middle-aged guys, the last hand.
Yeah. Man, we're 4 for 5 this week. Average of 7.2 minutes.
That's right.
And there goes our sponsorship deal.
We are being sponsored for as long as they'll have us by laststandhats.com. I said it right that time, you fuck.
Keep going, this is good.
If you go to lasthandstats.com... If you go to laststandhats.com and you use the code HORNSCAST10, you'll get 10% off any item on the site. Wear your heart on your head. It's the number one place for real Texas fans to get their game day gear. Again, that's laststandhats.com. Use the code HORNSCAST10 and get 10% off any item on their site. I saw them out yesterday at one of the tailgates I was at selling some of their wares. It's good stuff, man. It's quality hats.
I have one. I got the white Steve Spurrier regulation visor that has the State of Texas silhouette and burnt orange on it with the word fight above where Austin is. Got a lot of positive comments on it last night, the game. And I don't think I'll be buying the one that says DBU, though.
Well, that was the very popular going into last night. They're also selling a couple of T-shirts on their site now. DBU.
They have all kinds of great stuff. I'm not raking them over the coals for that.
Yeah, and I meant to do this last week when we did this first sponsor spot. We got thrown so badly by the last hand stats thing. didn't plan this beforehand, but we went into the stadium store at the Louisiana Tech game while we were in there at halftime, and there's a collection of hats on sale in there that make you realize there's a really pressing need in the market, apparently,
for good, creative stuff.
Good, legit Longhorn hats, because they had, I mean, I'll just describe, this is such a great medium for this radio, there's our podcast, whatever we're doing, but one that looks like it's a black hat with a white and a orange Longhorn on it, which is fine as far as it goes, but it's flat-brimmed with something that looks like Crockett and Tubbs stepped into the machine from The Fly and somehow got scrambled up. It's this bizarre kind of day glow fusion. I don't even know what's happening. It's just like Lovecraftian horror, basically, on the brim of the hat.
You can be saved from this tomfoolery by Last Stand Hats.
Yes, you can.
Exactly.
And, one of the things they do have on their site that I actually think is pretty cool, they have a nice 40-acre series hat. They also have a Legend series. They have a Legend series hat that have numbers of famous players, and they don't necessarily have names attached to them.
Well, they can.
Sponsorship, yes. But they do have, and these are players from all sports.
Uh-huh.
Football, baseball, basketball. They've got a number 8 hat for my friend Kat. They do have a number 8 hat that could be attached to a couple of different sports.
Uh-huh.
But that's another really cool one for the Legend Series, along with like the DBU hat and the State of Texas Fight hat. So... go to laststandhats.com, pick yourself up some cool Longhorn gear. It's a good up-and-coming company. Again, the code is HORNSCAST10 for 10% off any item on laststandhats.com. All right, so where do we go from here? That's going to be the question. They've got essentially 2 weeks to try and fix some things because they're going to be playing a very inferior Rice squad down at NRG in Houston next weekend that just lost their starting quarterback in their game this over the weekend. That's going to be a game where you should be able to do your basic stuff and romp. Then Oklahoma State comes to town, and Oklahoma State is still doing with the mulleted magician what they always do offensively.
On defense, I don't even know what Rice runs. Okay, so to a certain extent, what we can do on defense, I mean, I admit to being woefully unprepared for the Vaughn and Bryce Owls. I don't think you're going to string me up by my testes for that. But, although you might, you've done it for, done it for less. but so I don't know how much we can do in terms of improving on our defensive calls for that, because you kind of have to react to what your opponent does. But offensively, I think that I would like to see us continue to explore these 10 sets and empty sets as long as our running backs are thin. And as far as Keontae is concerned, I think that part of that is he's not fully healthy. And part of it may be also that with the added weight, he may have lost a step. We just don't know.
Well, he's got to get better.
He had a bad night.
And it wasn't just the drop either.
And it wasn't just a drop. And I don't know what the deal is there, but I would like to see Roe get a lot of carries this weekend and see us establish a run, because I don't think that's something that we did very well last night. But just keep guys healthy. This is a week where you work on fundamentals, and just, I don't worry about keeping stuff in the can, really,
right,
for Oklahoma State, because we already showed so much last night. Which we should have, and I'm glad we did. But to me, the big concern is, you know, our play calling on defense, and I don't think that's something that we can really work on with Rice, because it's not like we're going to be facing a similar scheme.
No, but yeah, Herman needs to, during that time, break out the speculum and do as deep and penetrating a review of our defensive problems as he can.
Yeah.
You know, sign Larry Fedora and... you know, we're starting to don't know if we're at Alabama levels yet, but we've definitely got some extra brains in the mix to help figure things out and just diagnose. And it's, you know, it seems like we've said this too many years with over too many defensive breakdowns, but get back to basics, establish one thing you do well, and then build from there.
Basics and fundamentals.
Rather than spinning the big wheel.
Seeing
what you land on, and then finding out it's a whammy. Oh, that's a very mixed game show metaphor.
Exactly. Your defensive playbook does not need to, the cover does not need to read Showcase Showdown.
Yeah. the one thing I would
although I will say we had this great conversation last night. Was there any better game show than like early 70s Match Game with Gene Rayburn? You had that long, friggin' dildo-looking microphone. And the panel was like Charles Nelson Reilly. And I'm so much older than
Brett Summers.
Brett Summers. You know, oh, it was just fabulous. I come home from lunch sometimes. My buddy Jay Corder, he watches like shit like that on Game Show Network at lunchtime. And he calls me and we watch it together. And it's fucking hysterical. And I'm really
the celebrities were
I mean, have to wonder. I mean, like,
it helps because it was the 70s and the celebrities were all drunk when they were on stage.
They were totally shit-faced. And you ever, the last night we had this long philosophical discussion. We wondered whether Charles Nelson Reilly and Paul Lynde from Hollywood Squares were ever an item. And that's a pretty deep question.
Yeah, probably one we don't need to delve into today. But
probably right.
It's one I don't necessarily want to think about, knowing who those two are.
Yeah, we're talking about delving deep in a big dildo microphone.
And large gaping holes and that kind of mess.
Charles Nelson Reilly's.
God damn it, I'd done so well holding it together. I'd held it together so well for about 40 minutes. And these bastards are out to get me.
Another 2 minutes, you'd have had the record.
Well, you know, I guess one thing, just going forward, the one thing, getting back to Ingram for a second, is I want to see him do less dancing at the line of scrimmage. I want to see him save his moves for when he's past the line and has already got a few yards upfield. That's the one thing I've just noticed he's doing still too much of, is he's doing a little too much dancing at the line of scrimmage, trying to find the perfect hole instead of just hitting one that's there and getting upfield and then making guys miss. Because we know he can break tackles and make guys miss. I just want to see a little more of that from him, because right now he's not performing up to the standard that they
I'm probably expect. Not the right person to talk to about a hit the hole analogy right now.
Well, this is also true. but the bottom line is that was.
Yeah, think of all the money we shave on a laugh track.
Sean, did you have any experience on those 70s game shows?
Yeah, at the time it was called the $775 Pyramid. You weren't terribly well budgeted. Unfortunately, it was a cadre of nubile production assistants. I wasn't invited back because I technically never made it from the green room onto the set.
Neither did she.
Well, the Longhorns, you know, despite the result last night, you know, I was disappointed and, you know, irritated about certain things today, but I wasn't angry because that team last night, this is one of the positives of last night, was you're playing a team that's as talented, if not more than you. It's a team that is obviously playing very good football right now, and you fell down by 2 scores and came back in the second half and made that game a fight. And, you know, I really loved what I saw from that team in the second half from that perspective. They came back and made that a game when it was teetering at halftime. It really was. It was on the verge of.
Well, they could have been down 20 points.
Yeah, they could have.
Because LSU had the ball to start the second half. It could have been 20 points. I don't know. It didn't make me angry either. But then again, I got a 9-year-old son, so I can't afford to get angry.
True.
So, I mean, if I fell victim to anger, we'd all be dead. But I thought, you know, we've talked a lot about what we could have done better here, because I think that Texas could have won the game, and the game
yes,
was in their hands to win.
Absolutely could have.
But I think, you know, like a lot of the players said last night, when we were in the car on our way out from our great parking spot, trying to get out from the stadium, listening to all the, weaving our way through all the drunk asses, I heard the players say on the post-game press conference that all their goals are still in front of them, and that's true. That's a little
without question.
I mean, their number one goal is to win the conference, and that's still out in front of them. And I think they have just as good of, or better of a chance at doing that today than I did yesterday. So it doesn't anger me, but it was a little frustrating, because I felt like we left, you know, about 10 points out there on the field.
Oh, yeah, we did. I mean, Texas, the reason Texas lost that game is because LSU took advantage of their opportunities, and Texas, pretty much every opportunity they had, Texas didn't.
Some of which we gifted them.
Yes, absolutely. I mean,
you know. Yeah, so. I mean, you've really said it all in terms of the teams, you know, every realistic goal for the season still being in front of them.
Sure.
And this being able to still be a season where you can take a significant step forward as a program and feel like you are truly poised to rejoin the elite and, you know, see if you can get a real snowball effect going in recruiting as well as on the field.
Yeah, I can't imagine any recruit that, and they had every recruit under the fucking sun at that game last night. I can't imagine that any recruit that was there came away from that going, yeah, I don't know if I want to play here.
Yeah, it was a really special atmosphere.
It was, from everything I could tell. It was just an electric
atmosphere. It was great being there. We had a great time.
All right, so as we wrap things up, we are recording on Sunday evening. Quick thoughts, guys. We watched like a whole day of NFL. Cowboys came out whoops some ass today, didn't they?
That made me happy. Anytime,
saved the weekend.
Yeah, anytime you get to see dumb, sad Eli face, it's a bonus. I mean, it's possible we may have seen close to our last of dumb, sad Eli face, because younger but still dumb and sad, Daniel Jones got out there at the end of the game, and that torch will probably be passed sooner rather than later just alleviate some heat from the fan base. But, yeah, If that's the new Kellen Moore offense, I mean, he looks like Ferris Bueller's stunt double, but...
But in tomorrow morning's Dallas Morning News, he'll be Bill motherfucking Walsh.
The overreaction Monday of week one of the NFL surrounding Kellen Moore is going to be pretty immense.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be crazy, because Dallas just... I mean, what a... Just a fantastic... That might be Dak's best game.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely been the school of thought. I've been... I guess, kind of up and down on Dak. And, you know, I get so twitchy at the idea of you're going to pay a guy that, like, is he somewhere between the, you know, 8th and 15th best quarterback in the league? Maybe in that range. If you got to pay him top two money just because that's the market, like, oh, that really... That stings, but...
What else are you going to do?
Exactly. You find yourself in hell either way. But I mean, there's definitely been the school of thought that, you know, he's been kind of handcuffed by an extremely conservative approach to, you know, play calling, offense design, all of that. And this was a very aggressive, you know, come out throwing all over the lot game plan. And, you know, he really shone doing it. You know, put some great balls on all of his men. Well, that's a...
Oh, fuck, we almost had it.
Oh, right there, yeah. And I almost had it.
I was waiting for you. I was just so, I was like, oh my God, he's going to walk right into this trap. Going to walk right into it.
Oh,
and just... shit, you caught yourself. I mean, God, fuck you for not drinking on a Sunday. It pays to be the only sober one here.
Oh, yeah. Put good balls on all his men.
He did. Oh. Oh my God. What a great way to end this. Holy crap.
Yeah, well, don't know if it's great, but it's certainly on brand.
It is most definitely on brand for the Barking Carnival Unplugged podcast. Wow.
All right, we're out of here.
So that'll wrap it up for us here on this episode of the BC Unplugged podcast. When you hear from us next, we will, you know, be reviewing hopefully what we saw. I mean, the Rice game, there shouldn't be a whole lot to talk about. Let's just put it that way. Other than just, hey, that they did those things better in the game. Yeah. But other than that, there shouldn't be a whole lot to talk about. So it's very possible. Maybe we can touch on a couple other subjects in the next episode.
Maybe have an ugly Johnny Dick Shot baseball report. Ugly Johnny Dick Shot baseball report because
we're getting close to playoff time. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Do that.
And you know, maybe see if anything else interesting happens in the world of college football. Oh, before we go, since we didn't touch on this. Hi, Aggies. How was that?
I really don't care.
You have to admit, it was so nice to watch the Clemson defense just constrict them like a boa.
I just don't. You know, I mean, like, they're going to do what they're going to do. And the only thing I thought was funny about that was how much time, at least on my Twitter feed, I saw A&M people spending a lot of time worrying about the Texas LSU game when they're about to go square off against the defending national champions in their own house. I don't know. I mean, I'm a hell of a lot more worried about what Oklahoma does.
Oh, no question. And, you know, it's...
Do I like it when A&M gets beat? Well, yeah, they're a source of amusement. that's all they are. Yeah. So,
but it was, like I said, it was a nice little toucher on the day. It made the afternoon out in the heat at the tailgates somewhat bearable watching them just get dominated.
Little footnote.
You say it was a nice little toucher on the day?
Something of that nature. Yeah. I'll let that slide. Touching and balls on men.
I mean, no, it's just still a sore point. We had to return that that Epstein sponsorship money. So. Will worked so hard to get that lined up in the off season, and then things went the way they went. Us and the MIT research board kind of found ourselves in a similar position.
That's right.
And on that note, until you hear from us again, for Jason Chilton, a.k.a. Noba 60, for Craig Douglas, a.k.a. W.W. McClyde, and for myself, Jacob Dedamore, a.k.a. Kip's Big Boy, everyone have a great rest of your week and hook 'em.